Welcome to Let's Talk Death, conversations to inform and inspire. Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a nonprofit providing the tools and resources to support one's journey with grief. We seek to empower individuals to achieve a healthy post-bereavement growth. Everything we do is inspired by our core belief that no one should ever grieve alone. Let's Talk Death is a series of conversations with some amazing people from various fields. Our goal through these conversations is to normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief. Hello, welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Death. I'm Fran Solomon.
And I'm Andy McNeil.
And we are thrilled to be your host for these conversations.
Our guest today is Carol Schoenberg. Originally from San Francisco, Carol has been a hospice educator and grief counselor in Maine since 1992. She has served as an end-of-life educator, bereavement services manager, and grief counselor at Hospice of Southern Maine, Maine's only freestanding not-for-profit hospice since its inception in 2004. Carol provides end-of-life education to staff, volunteers, healthcare providers, universities, and the community. In 2001, Carol participated in the Respecting Choices program at Gunderson Lutheran Hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where she became certified as an advanced care planning facilitator trainer. Working with the dying and the bereaved has inspired and taught her much about the human spirit's resiliency. She strongly believes in how helping people talk about their choices for end-of-life care can make a huge difference in the way families experience the dying process. Carol, we are delighted to have you as a guest on our show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here today.
So, Carol, let me ask you, before we get into your work, may I ask, was there a personal experience, a death loss, in your life that led you down your career path?
There was. I've thought about this a lot because doing the work, I'm sure you know, you get asked, why would you possibly want to do this or how did you get here? I think it started initially when I had a mystical experience as a five-year-old. I didn't know that's what it was at the time, but I was raised by a single mom in the 50s with three kids, and we were sitting in the back seat of the church, and everybody that sat back there were the old people who all had a hearing device that they could hold up to their ear. And I was sitting there doodling like I always did, and I looked up and it was amazing. There was a white light surrounding all the heads of these old people. There were two rows of them. And they were people who were like surrogate grandparents to me, many of them. I loved them. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that it was anything strange, but I knew in that moment that everyone was going to die. I had this very clear, these people are all going to die. And it didn't scare me. Another thing that happened around in that time was I didn't meet my father till I was 8 years old. And I carried a lot of shame and embarrassment and enormous sadness. I realized that grief was something that was the elephant in the room in all these experiences throughout my life. When I was in my early 20s and living in San Francisco, a young man in our circle of friends jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was the first suicide and death of a close friend. I see I'm very emotional talking about these things as it rises to the surface.
Sure. Yeah.
And all my friends, nobody talked about it. You know, no one talked about anything. Around that time, I read Kubler-Ross's On Death and Dying, and that was just, I couldn't get enough of it. And then I was living in San Francisco during the AIDS epidemic, and I wanted to do something to make a difference. There was so much sadness and death. And so soon after that, my family, I had a young family, and we moved to Maine. And within 2 weeks of arriving in Maine, I connected with a local hospice. I went through the hospice volunteer training. Before the training ended, I was offered a job, and I took that job. And on the first day of the job, I had a piece of paper that said, here, you're going out to Mary's house. And, you know, that's how it started. And I discovered that it is work that gives me energy rather than taking it away. And although it's often tiring and holding a lot of space, but so meaningful and wonderful. And I've been doing the work ever since then.
First of all, let me say, you know, it is interesting how when we may have shared these 100 times, but the energy that's connected to those things, because they're so deeply connected to who we are even now and what drives us. So thank you for sharing that, and that we can feel that energy that you were feeling in sharing that.
I've actually not shared all those pieces ever before.
Really? Wow. Well, then we consider it a sacred honor that you shared it here with us today. We really do. It's one of the things we love about these conversations. Those who are listening in identify with what you're saying and with what we're saying, and knowing that we have that connectedness as well.
Right.
It's inspiring. It's inspiring how that grief can really be transitioned into something that is so special and such a gift to others.
Yeah. I wonder if you could share a little bit about, so your work with hospice. I mean, it sounds like you connected there and you found your place. If you could share just a little bit about your work with hospice and what you have learned being with families and present with people.
Absolutely. Well, apart from having children, I've learned everything that's important in life.
Yeah.
I'm both an end-of-life educator in my work, so I do that out in the community, and I love that, and I find a lot of meaning in that, and have opportunities to be the first person sometimes that a family is talking to when they're considering hospice. And as far in, and then the other part of my role is I'm a grief counselor. And every day I am amazed by people's journeys and what they share and what they endure in their life and by the human capacity for resiliency, even in the most unbelievably heartbreaking, tragic situations, people find their way back.
Yeah.
And just being able to be with them on that journey, to, you know, walk beside them, to maybe help navigate when that's possible, or it's just a great honor. I can't say enough about it, and it's hard sometimes to try to explain to people why anyone would possibly want to do work like this, because of course our culture sees it as depressing and negative and dark, and I try to help people understand that grief isn't negative. It's or positive. It's grief, and sad isn't bad, and all of those things, that it's just such a natural part of our life.
Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a 501c3. As a nonprofit, we are reliant on the kind generosity of our donors. If you are inspired by our mission, we ask you to go to healgrief.org/donations to help us continue our great work. No gift is too small.
Yeah, Carol, I'd like to ask you, you mentioned Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and if I remember mm-hmm. correctly, actually it was her son that shared it with me when I had the fortune of meeting him at one point, that Elizabeth found that those patients that were able to express themselves and say those things left unsaid had an easier death and transition than those that didn't, where their transition may have been more agitated. Has that been your experience?
Absolutely. You can't work in hospice and not see that and recognize it early. You know, the person who's dying is in the driver's seat. And being in hospice, I've learned so much about the way I hope I die. And when you see someone who dies with absolute grace, we always say in hospice, you die the way you've lived, and it's what we see over and over again. And I say we grieve the way we've lived. That's all I am. That's all I have to work with, is whatever is inside. And people who do those, we call the four things that matter most at the end of life, you know, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. When a patient is able to do that with the people they love and vice versa, yes, they have a better death. And it's so wonderful to be able to work with families in the after hospice experience where they're with bereavement and recognize that when a family has had that experience, the clients are in a very different starting place in their grief. It doesn't soften or diminish their grief in any way, but they're not carrying all these, I wish I would have, even though, of course, that's a natural part of grief too. Could have, should have, would have. But they're not wishing they had said to mom the things they wanted to say or they had asked for forgiveness. And so their bereavement is less complex, I would say, as a result of that.
Another one of our guests, and that was beautifully said, thank you. Another one of our guests shared that he witnessed that many of his patients, as they were coming to their near death, actually seemed to have conversations with people that they were visioning on the other side.
Yes, absolutely. And you don't have to be in hospice to witness that. You know, many families share that with us and share those stories. If we're not there when it happens, that happened with my mom when she was dying soon after I started doing hospice work. And yes, that one foot in this world, one in the next, and people having conversations with those that are there to greet them. It's always made sense to me that, you know, somebody's there to catch us when we're born. Why wouldn't somebody be there to take our hand when we're leaving? And it's so common, you know, that it happens all the time. That person looking up into the corners of the rooms, you know, I learned early on, oh, that's why they put icons up in the corners of the rooms and, you know, certain Greek Orthodoxy. And they're there. And so interesting. I've witnessed also with my son when he was 4, when my mother died, he saw what was happening. He literally saw her soul leave. Now, we didn't live in a family that sort of talked like this. But what I have learned is that there is something incredibly magical, mystical, mysterious about 4 years old, four, and their ability to be very much present and a part of. Clients who I've had who say, you know, I walked by my granddaughter's room the other day and she was sitting on the bed and she was just talking away and happy. And I said, you know, honey, who are you talking to? And she said, Bumpa, he's here with me. And I have seen them engaging in this way with my own two eyes. I know it happens. And it's incredible. It's beautiful.
With your experience as an end-of-life educator, you must have seen over the years just a number of, we've gone through so many transitions in the last 50 years when it comes to end-of-life, and even physicians and healthcare, just even embracing some of the things that are part of that. What are some of those things that you've seen over the years? Has that been a part of what you do? Have there been challenges as a result of some of the maybe misinformation that's out there when you end up having to work with families? What's been your experience with that piece?
I've seen change in these 30 years, but of course, real change is slow. It's slow to happen, important change. But what I've seen are more physicians able to deliver bad news.
Yeah.
I've seen certainly since the mid-90s is when the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation grants were making a difference and really changing the way Americans talk about dying. And so I've seen, you know, more universities wanting, I'll go and speak about end of life, wanting education. Do I think it's enough? No. Do I think it should be running threaded throughout all 4 years of medical school? Yes. But I also recognize that there's just so much time and things that they can include. One of the things that I see less of, but in my mind, still not enough, are physicians. And I know they all mean well, and I don't want to do any physician bashing. I'm grateful for what the work they do. And our end-of-life docs are incredible, and those involved in hospice and palliative care. But there are still people who give false hope. There's no other way to say it. It's intentional false hope with a belief that it is going to, that people can't take the real news, or that this is going to be kind and helpful. And I try to educate them to know that they're doing damage, and the damage appears in the bereavement process for each of those family members who feel they were lied to, who said, well, you know, the doctor said he had 2 weeks to 3 months. So I thought it was going to be the 3 months, and I didn't get to say all the things I was waiting to say. So I think that's one area that we need a lot more education in.
Yeah, I agree. When my mother was dying with cancer, in her position, lovely man, just we adore him and still do to this day. But he just could not speak truth to her. And I had numerous conversations with him, again, based on what I do, you know, in my life. And I would sit in when he had a conversation with my mother, and I would step out of the room with him, and I would say, what just happened in there? And he would say, Andy, I can't bring myself to do it. I can't do it. I just cannot. And he knew, you know, that there was a sense of urgency, and what as a result, and again, you know, I have a background in hospice, and I've worked in bereavement my whole life, but when it's personal, it's different. And what it did is it forced us as a family, forced me as a family member, to have to make decisions and do things that you don't want to have to put on families at the time. We need the support, but now we're having to be the one to have those hard conversations with a family member, when it would have so helped to have the physician to say that. And my mom is a lovely woman. She deserved to know the truth.
Yeah.
And make the decisions she wanted to make as a result of that.
That's right. He didn't allow you to be the son. He put you in the role of a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of my regrets in that whole process. But someone had to do it. And it was, right. And again, a lovely man, wonderful physician, great at what he does. I don't have bad feelings toward physicians, but as you said, it's one of those areas where there's still growth for us, and I think potential for families. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I think it's an area that if more and more physicians understood the, you know, what they say and do makes a difference in how they do it and the end results of that, I believe that that would be something to help spur them towards, I got to get better at this. You know, this is my obligation and my duty.
Carol, I want to hear about the annual Thresholds Conference.
Well, every year at Hospice of Southern Maine, we have a conference called Thresholds. It's an annual event, and we believe that by acknowledging death as a part of life, that it helps those who come to have more honest conversations about end of life and to be together with people. It's for the general public. We've learned this year that virtual events can work really, really well. Our whole bereavement program has been virtual this year, and it has not lost meaning or depth. So this year, Thresholds is going to be virtual. It is something that we hope people will participate in. We have wonderful speakers. Dr. B.J. Miller is going to be part of it, and Barbara Carnes. And anybody who's looking for more information about Thresholds can look at our website, which is www.hospiceofsouthernmaine.org.
Great. Thank you for that.
Well, Carol, we're about out of time, and you shared your website, so that's wonderful. I know people can probably connect with you there. Folks who listen in, they want to know how they can connect with your work. So certainly, would that be the website that they would go to, or are there other ways that they would connect with you in your work?
They could go to that website, and there's a bereavement link. And if they click on the link and follow that link on down, there's a link to me. But anything that is sent to Hospice of Southern Maine, I will get, and would welcome anybody's questions or shared experience, anything at all would be wonderful. So grateful for this opportunity, too. Thank you.
Carol, thank you for being such a wonderful guest here at Let's Talk Death, and for sharing the inspiration, your story that led you down your path and your work.
My pleasure. Thank you. Great to meet you too. I love the work you're doing.
If you would like to learn more about Heal Grief, visit us at healgrief.org to find other conversations or to inquire about becoming a guest speaker. Visit us at healgrief.org/letstalkdeath. And if you feel inspired to support us, remember, no gift is too small. Visit us at healgrief.org/donations, or you can donate right through our homepage. Well, that's it until next time on Let's Talk Death, where we normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief.